Take It From Us is taking a well-deserved break at the moment, so today's episode is a repeat program.
Our theme music from Joe Cocker, his track called Respect Yourself. I'm host Sheldon Brown, and this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, brought to you and funded by Ember Wellbeing Trust. It may well be the last live show that we do on Planet FM for at least the next fortnight, so we've got to sort of pinch hit this situation. And The Herald this morning, Monday morning, the headline reads, Testing Times, with a photograph of people hardly distancing, they're socially distancing themselves outside a Pack and Save supermarket in Lincoln Road. I'd say probably 200 people waiting to get into that Pack and Save before the doors opened yesterday. So panic buying and panic generally seems to be paramount. I went into a countdown after being at Waiheke yesterday afternoon. There wasn't a piece of meat or chicken that I could buy on the shelves. I had to rely on the last piece of salmon. So I'm not sure that Kiwis are really doing what they're told to do in terms of this virus and the tragedy that the world is facing. It certainly is very frightening in relation to how the world has changed in just a few days, and I'm just hoping that the next few days don't see as much change again. We have changed the agenda for Take It From Us today. We were going to talk about suicide and a book called Facing the Dark, A Journey into Suicide, with our guest Molly Ireland, who has written that book. But Molly is also a wellness coach, and I think it is very apt to talk to Molly about our mental health, how to look after our mental health in this virus-torn world. And I must say that I'm not looking forward to being alone, spending long periods of time in my house. I think I'd rather go to Waiheke Island than be at the Batch, and I've got several projects I could do there, so I could feel sort of useful. But Molly, how do we feel useful faced with all this negative change that's happening?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Sheldon. And I think it starts with embracing it as something that will bring benefit to our lives in some strange way. And that is one of the things I do as a wellness coach, is I help people reframe tragedy. I help people look at the gifts in absolutely everything we experience as human beings, because the reality is we're not going to get out of life unscathed. This is Earth school. And I truly believe that we are here to learn, to grow, to overcome adversity, whether that is mental health and suicidal ideation or whatever you are faced with, or whether it's just gripping fear about viruses circulating our world. It doesn't matter kind of where it comes from. The fact is both fear and this anxiety that we're now kind of trapped in the moment, these are really signs and things that we have to do to overcome in order to improve our mental health.
Well, I think all of us who are vulnerable to mental health have experienced great pain, and some, I think, have achieved great gain from that pain, which has strengthened us, made us more resilient. Are you, as a wellness coach, already getting demand from your clients or new clients about COVID-19?
Yeah, I've seen a huge spike in my client base in the last week, and it's really for helping people to cope through change and helping them to cope with anxiety. One of the beliefs that I have, whether it's true or not, we could argue till the cows come home, but it's a very useful belief, and that belief is that everybody has inside them the ability to overcome hardship, overcome tough times. It's not just relegated for the few, right? The people who somehow have some special, you know, skill or whatever. Having said that, they are skills that we can learn. And one of the things that during this time is so, so important is that we look at where are we missing skills. And one of those foundational skills is to reframe. So yes, this week I've seen a huge increase in my client base. And one of the things that I'm, sharing with them is to look at this as a chance to be a little more self-reflective in our lives. We tend to live at this enormously fast clip rate. We're constantly, we're bordering on, just schizophrenic, manic,
panic.
All panic all the time. And this is a really good chance to help bring us back into balance. And so if we can use it, if we can see it that way, then I think it has tremendous healing properties for our entire planet.
Well, already we're seeing some of those healing things happening. The dolphins have returned to the canals of Venice, and I saw some beautiful footage of these dolphins in the canals playing, entertaining people, making connection with people. There was another beautiful photograph of this family of geese that were walking across a major runway, I think, in Turkey. There's mum and dad goose there and about five or six babies, and they're walking right across the airstrip. So,
And what you say, those connections are really important right now. But the problem is a lot of us as individuals haven't focused enough on how do we relate to people? How do we communicate to people? How do we watch our own language so it's not always in crisis mode? I think we are incredibly impacted. Everything's contagious. We are incredibly impacted by other people and what is happening around us. And so we need to look at when we call the emergency, when we raise the flag internally, then that spreads out to everything around us. Now, it doesn't mean we don't need to take sensible steps to protect ourselves and our families. Absolutely. But there's a way to do it that is helpful. And I think that's one of the things that we know about suicide as well, is that there are helpful ways to talk about suicide and mental health and depression. And then there are ways to talk about it which aren't useful.
Well, perhaps we can park the suicide subject till a little later in the broadcast. But the challenge seems to me that connection with people, we're going to be deprived of that connection because of social distancing and a possible lockdown, which has already happened in places like Italy and I think definitely progressing in the UK, in the States. I think they've left things a little bit late. You come from Alaska, so I guess you have an interest in not only what is happening in Alaska and North America, but also here in New Zealand. But how do we get through however many weeks it is going to be alone?
Yeah, and I think that most people actually, it's interesting time because on one hand we're socially isolated from a wider community, but we're more closely connected to ourselves during this time and to our immediate families generally. So most people being, on self-isolation, for instance, still have immediate family members around them. And so cultivating and caring for those relationships and the relationship with ourself. This is one relationship that we often have a lot of judgments about, right? We think, oh, if I have a good relationship with myself or I spend time on myself, then I'm somehow seen to be selfish or I'm somehow, I'm just wasting time. But in fact, what we're doing by cultivating a deeper relationship with ourselves is it means that we have more to give people, not only our immediate family, which we tend to have a lot of one-on-one time with right now, or close proximity time.
It may not be quality time.
It may not be quality time. And in fact, what we're seeing out of the U.S. and the U.K. is a bit alarming in terms of domestic violence rates, that they've just gone through the roof, and it's directly correlated with isolation within homes. So that's something that's incredibly worrying. But what it shines a light on is that we don't have the skills to relate to each other or ourselves at deeper levels, and that we need to really use this time to think about maybe those relationships at another level, rather than just constantly being frantically busy and going out and achieving in the outside world.
Right.
Go, do. Now is a time to sit and say, okay, who am I? What is my contribution? What kind of relationships do I want close by me?
Yeah, well, that's deep and meaningful stuff, isn't it? I feel quite fortunate that I've had a major project at this batch of mine on Waiheke, and I spent quite a lot of time there on my own. And I guess I've been sustained by the bird life. Like yesterday, I was repotting some plants in a little conservatory, which is part of the batch. And this fantail flew into where I was working, perched himself on the washing line, a makeshift washing line above where I was working, and we had this wonderful chat, and then it danced its way down the conservatory and flew out the back door. And, it was as lovely as somebody coming to see me there.
Yeah.
In fact, it was probably lovelier, actually.
And that's a really good thing to remember during this time of heightened stress and anxiety, is that there is actually a lot of research to suggest that connecting into nature, meditation, quiet time, any kind of journaling or going within sort of work, all of these things actually increase our ability of our immune systems to function better.
Right.
So we need to start doing some of those things rather than rushing around or frantically cleaning the house, because once you frantically clean the house a couple of times, then you're kind of done. So then you have to sort of say, okay, how can I actually, and meditation rates, and there's some really great apps online and things to just start to learn to meditate. Now, I know meditation can be a scary word for a lot of people. It's actually just being quiet and noticing things.
Right.
And this is a great time, as is nature. Nature's hugely protective for our mental well-being as well as our physical well-being.
So we're going to be allowed to go out into nature, aren't we? Although the Department of Conservation on the news last night was closing down all the big tracks, and I think that may be because they're very worried that some tourists in the country haven't socially isolated, haven't self-isolated for the two-week period. And so they're virtually saying, because there's a doubt about this self-isolation, we're closing the facilities down.
Yeah.
But we can still get into nature, can't we?
Yes, we can. And I hope there isn't that overreaction, that's geared toward a few people who are breaking, the rules, so to speak, because we really need nature to a much greater, we need this earth at a much greater degree right now than we ever have. And yesterday, I'll give you an example. I was walking with one of my daughters around the Iraqi Basin. I live in Remuera, and We're all pretty much in, you know, a lot of people there are not going out much. The shops, aside from the panic buying that happened last week, are pretty much empty now, and so are the cafes. But almost everybody was at the Iraqi basin yesterday walking around it with their dogs. I couldn't believe it. There were more people walking around the Iraqi basin than I've ever seen, ever.
Were they socially distancing themselves?
We were trying, yes, but we were all in our little walking modes and not talking much and doing, but at least we were in nature. And I think those places, I think people reaching that point, starting to quiet down inside themselves and learning to embrace this time would be a really good thing.
Well, let's come back after a music break to talk about the importance of quietening down. We're going to celebrate Kenny Rogers, who died a couple of days ago at the age of 81. I did a little bit of research on Kenny Rogers, and I was just amazed. He was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame, one of the most deserving modern inductees, with more than 100 million records sold, 21 country music number one hits, and multiple pop chart toppers. He was also a rock musician as well, and this might sound a little bit egotistical, but some people have said that I look a bit like Kenny Rogers. My guest is sort of affirming that, but that might be taking things a little too far. But anyway, here we have Kenny Rogers with Daytime Friends. Well, that's Kenny Rogers. We're celebrating his music on Take It From Us today. I'm host Sheldon Brown, and thanks to Declan for contacting me last night. Declan, who was doing the technical work for Take It From Us, to contribute again to Take It From Us and supply four tracks of Kenny Rogers. So we're talking today to guest Molly Ireland. We were going to be talking about her book called Facing the Dark, A Journey into Suicide, but the dramatic developments with COVID-19 and its potential impact on those of us who are vulnerable to mental health. You were saying, Molly, before the music break, that that quiet times have tremendous value.
Yeah, they do, and we resist it so much. Collectively as humanity, we often will resist it because we've somehow grown up to believe that it's scary, or somehow it puts us in touch with the dark side or something.
Or we're not making any money while we're sitting at home.
Or we're not making money, and yet the reality of it is when we go out, back out after quiet time, is we can figure new things out. We have a clarity. We also have a hope. And one of the things I want to talk about a little bit is about hope in this time, because there's a guy called C.R. Schneider out of the University of Kansas, and he's studied this very subject for about 45 years in his research. And one of the things he talks about, we often think of hope as just kind of one of those, you know, nebulous sort of feelings, right? And he actually has shown in his research that it's far more than that, that it is actually a way for us when we hope. In other words, when we focus our attention, our mind, everything on what we want, on new possibilities, right? New openings and things getting better and things for us, improving. When we're doing this, it's far more than just a feeling or a good, nice, happy thing that we're sitting there doing. We're actually, what he's talking about is we're enabling us to set goals and to achieve goals. It's actually a direct cognitive mechanism for achieving of goals. So one of the things I do with my well-being clients, particularly right now, is help them get into a good habit of hope.
Right. I mean, that's almost in conflict with what is happening around us. I mean, what would you say about how much news we read at the moment?
Because I think it's a problem. I honestly think it's not that we need to stay informed. We need to be sensible. We need to shut schools if we have cases here. We cannot bury our heads in the sand. Having said that, there comes a point where we need, as journalists, right, to start spreading other news, or people who have found interesting ways to deal with COVID-19, for instance, or any kind of setback. And this is what they show on the suicide research too, is that when journalists will publish information about how people have overcome tendencies to want to take their own lives, that more people then are able, then it has a protective effect on the society. It's the same thing with viruses or anything that could be scaring us. We need to first face it. We need to look at it, and we have to say, hey, this is real, which in New Zealand I think is doing incredibly well. And then we need to not focus so much on it that it pulls down our whole energy and our whole psyche, and that we're not able to reach for hope. And people who have mental health issues are particularly susceptible right now to getting caught in that quagmire of anxiety and should not watch as much media.
So those people are the ones that I'm concerned about. They may not be seeing their community support worker or their peer support specialist, because face-to-face contact is probably frowned on, unsafe, not healthy. They may not even be able to get through to their health provider. I mean, before we did this interview, I wanted to try and book a flu injection because people are saying that to get the injection is probably a positive thing. It took me 15 minutes on the phone to get through, and I've discovered that my medical centre in Royal Oak is not open. I have to come in to get the flu injection in the kitchen of the at the back of the premises. So, you know, it all underlines uncertainty, doesn't it? Change. So we've just got to get used to it, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we have to put new mechanisms for supporting ourselves into place. And we need to, you know, for instance, watch out for each other to a greater degree. If we have family members or friends who have been prone to mental illness in particular, I think it's good to put some sort of system in place with them. For example, they could text, you know, a word to you or to a friend and be able to reach out if something got quite bad for them internally while they're in isolation or they're not able to actually see someone physically.
Right.
And these kinds of things, first of all, require a certain awareness and a certain amount of health to be able to set those things up for themselves. But we as people who are supporting those people can initiate them too. But one of the greatest things we can do in this time is to really listen to each other. We are such poor listeners, generally, that we need to really be okay with no matter what anyone tells us. And this is the thing with mental health. So many people are too embarrassed, too ashamed to actually share what's in deep in their hearts, the fact that they may have thought of taking their lives or they haven't been happy at one time or another. I honestly believe that there's not one single person on this planet who hasn't had the occasional, oh my gosh, why am I here? Wouldn't it be better not to be kind of discussion with ourselves. So we have to normalize mental illness in a certain way too, because the line between mental illness and mental health can often be very, very thin. We can slide from one to the other, and we need to be able to hear people in their pain. We need to be able to sit with them in that dark place. And there are a lot of people right now who are very, very anxious, who are very worried about all kinds of things, family members, but also themselves. And we need to reach out to them and say, whatever you're going through, I'm here. And we actually have to stop talking quite so much.
We've got two ears and one mouth. We should be using those in that proportion, shouldn't we? You must be able to read my mind, because listening is something that seems to be disappearing in this country.
It's a skill. And what always amazes me, Sheldon, is that, you know, at schools we teach people how to read. We teach them how to, you know, do logical reasoning and math and all these great
play,
useful
and
things.
And play rugby.
Right. But we don't teach people how to listen. And right. We're all expected to come out of the womb and say, oh, great, I'm a great listener. Well, it just doesn't work that way.
Well, look, I think if I was to ring somebody up and say, look, I've got COVID-19 and I'm sweating my way through, you know, this illness, they'd say, oh, yes, I've had something like that before. They wouldn't even ask you, you know, how you really were. That seems to be, we seem to want, if somebody says something and we seem to want to top what they say rather than ask the open-ended questions of how are you about this, you know?
Yeah, and it's really a lack of skill. To me, it's a lack of skill, but it's a lack of awareness and mindset that then keeps that lack of skill from happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. And I think what we have to do is we have to start to think about, okay, if anyone in my immediate environment has what we could call a problem or something they're off in some way, we are very aware, mostly, if we choose to be, about what people are feeling around us, right? And so if we notice that someone is off or they could be off, right, because of the circumstances, then we really need to reach out to them, and we have to be able to say, hey, I'm going to just reflect back. And, you know, this reflective listening, active listening, is one of the most fundamental communication skills that should be taught in every school on the planet. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we tend to belittle it, or we tend to push it aside, and we don't use it when we need it the most. And here's a great time for me, in my mind, for us to be more cognizant of that and to focus
on
it.
Well, what a wonderful suggestion. I mean, with this me, tendency, well, it's almost an addiction, I think. When we have that me attitude, we just want to talk about our issues and our experiences and the new restaurant we've been to, which was, you know, great. But you can't go to those restaurants anymore. In fact, it looks as though my tennis interest has gone down the Swanee because you can't play tennis, which surprises me. But I think we've got to become more selfless and think of others.
Yeah, and I don't actually see those as signs of selfishness. I see those as signs of being uncomfortable with anything deeper than the superficial. And most people, honestly, if you sit there and we say, okay, we're just going to sit here and look at each other for a minute, right, not say anything. Most people are incredibly uncomfortable with that. You know, and the fact that now we've got to think about different levels of conversation. Our conversation needs to deepen now because it isn't going to be anymore about the new bar that opened in Parnell or, you know, or how we did on this tennis range, whatever, right? It's got to be about something more substantial. And I think anything that helps us relate to each other at a more substantial level is a good thing. But we can't resist it. We have to say, okay, I'm going to be quiet with this. I'm going to face it, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's not what I'm used to, I'm going to embrace it with two arms.
Well, I think we need to be quiet with ourselves as well and not jump on our phone and ring everybody and that sort of thing. Just sit with this and feel the isolation and, as you say, try to be hopeful. Well, let's take another music break, and we're playing Kenny Rogers on Mental Health Radio. Take it from us, celebrating his 81 years of wonderful music and... we've got his track, Desperado.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but you got your reasons. The things that are pleasing you will hurt you somehow. Don't you call I'm not afraid to
Desperado. Thanks very much to Declan, who supplied and provided these tracks that we're playing to celebrate Kenny Rogers' life. We're talking today to Molly Ireland, who has published a book called Facing the Dark, A Journey into Suicide. We were going to talk extensively about that book and about suicide generally. Molly, we will turn to suicide. Do you have concerns that the suicide rates or that suicide could become an option for people in this dark time?
Yeah, I think it's always an option. I think in particularly there's a direct correlation between economic hardship and taking of life, unfortunately. And so, yes, the whole uncertainty around how the economy is rejigging and people losing jobs, is a real factor. And it is particularly concerning in a country like New Zealand, where we lost 685 people in 2019 to suicide. And if we start looking at the youth pullout rates within that, it becomes even more alarming, right? And this is the youth suicide rates are something like twice the annual road toll. So our focus to me...
Sorry, can I interrupt there? Yeah. The youth suicide rates are twice the road toll?
Yes, right now. No, of youth road toll.
Road toll.
So
right,
our overall suicide rate of 685 is generally about twice the road toll every year.
Right.
But yes, the youth rates, we've seen a skyrocket in youth suicide in that 15 to 24 year age group since 2007. It's more than doubled that rate in this country, and it's a concern, and it's something that I work every day with families, and I'm very passionate about how can we reach out to youth, but how can we reach out to families overall and look at how are we feeling hopeful,
right,
as opposed to hopeless.
I mean, going back to that lack of skill that some Kiwis have in terms of listening. I mean, do you think that is a contributor to youth suicide, that youth don't feel heard? It's hard enough to open up to your parents or your loved ones or your friends, your peers. And if you do open up and then you don't get listened to, that must be one of the most frustrating things to happen.
Yeah, I think it's really a problem. And I think there's a number of things that are feeding into it. I don't think there's one thing that really contributes, although our inability to listen and to be with people in dark times is one of our major lacking points, I think, in this country. But another thing is we have if we look at youth and we look at raising children, we look at education, everything is really a behavior-centric model. So if we don't like someone's behavior, in fact, I had a call from a principal in the States actually last week, who's someone I used to do a lot of professional development for teachers in the U.S. And one of the things he said to me is, Molly, we had to call the police on a 9-year-old because he was so out of control that we couldn't do anything with it. And I was just really saddened by this, but it's a real reflection of how when a child, everything is geared toward how that child is behaving, okay, as opposed to what's going internally inside with that child. And that the fact that there was nobody who could sit with that child during really hard times, and that they only felt that the only option they had was to call the police, to me is a really sad indictment, not only on the U.S. We've got the same thing going here in New Zealand, where we are so focused on children acting out. Right? And if you think of the game charades, right? You know the game charades. Well, what do? You can't use words, so you act out. Well, anyone under the age of about 22 doesn't usually have the vocabulary or the ability to use, form their feelings into words. So what do? They act out. And the problem is we're so focused on the bad behavior, people going out and dancing on Bondi Beach. We're so focused on children being defiant in class that we haven't stopped and said, hey, what is actually going on internally, emotionally with this child? And until we begin to get away from that behavior, this carrot and the stick sort of mindset that we're at, we're going to continue not to listen to children. We're going to continue to try and shut them down. Now, if we're not doing that in society, you know what else we're doing? We're medicalizing them, right? So if they don't sit still in class, we put them on Ritalin. If they can't do this, it's a medical condition. Depression is a gene, supposedly, and that we have to drug. Okay, so if we're not behaviorizing them, we're medicalizing them. And actually, we need a new way now of dealing with youth and people in trouble, generally, not just young people in trouble who are doing bad things. We actually need to be able to listen to them, and we need to help them meet where they are first and then be able to influence them and help teach them resilience and new ways of expressing their hurt.
Well, hopefully mindfulness and meditation, maybe Tai Chi, all of those things might be seen with the value that they should be seen, because they have huge value in terms of re-energizing us, calming us, generally getting our life into perspective.
Yeah, and I think we as parents need a fundamental shift in our perspective, that when you see bad behavior, it's just a sign that something else is going on, that we need to be patient. We don't have all the answers. And in fact, we don't want all the answers. We make our children very dependent on us if we solve all their problems, if we protect them too much from hard stuff or change or challenge.
Wow.
We really, really do them a huge disservice.
Well, we do tend to try and wrap them in cotton wool. We drive them to school. We don't let them, ride their bikes to school on their own. I mean, I was out gardening at Waiheke, and these two young boys on their bikes with their helmets on, and they were only about 7, I reckon, you know, and I thought, wow, isn't that just wonderful? Their parents trust that they're going to be safe on this island. They're riding their bikes around, and it just took me back to my childhood when I was 7 and 8 and had the freedom to ride all around Sumner, and a bit older I'd ride all around Banks Peninsula, and what a wonderful experience that was.
Yeah, I'm working on my second book, which is called Depression Proofing Children at the moment, and this extra time hopefully will give me time to get it finished. But that's one of the things we really have to look at, is that as we have protected our children more, we have over-parented them in many, many ways, and as we've become more anxious and more fearful in the world, we tend to then spread that to our children. We tend to then overcompensate in terms of keeping them safe. And I really get that. I'm a mother of 4 grown daughters now, so I really get that one of the hardest things for us as mothers, but as parents overall, is to be able to impart a sense of trust and hope in our children, that they have everything they need to solve their own problems. We can support them, and we're not going to let them drop too far.
No.
But it's not our job to solve their problems. Otherwise, we seriously disempower our children. Yeah. And it's not a far step from disempowerment to hopelessness. Mm. It's really close. And if no one has ever listened to you, you think, well, why should I listen to myself? Why should I'm not valuable? My mom and dad don't have enough, you know, trust in me to know that I can do this myself, so they're going to solve it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm going to let them do it because it's easier.
But that doesn't do anything to build resilience or independence.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, let's take another music break on Mental Health Radio Taken From Us. We're playing Kenny Rogers in something of a celebration, and we've got a track from Kenny Rogers called Lady.
I love you. You have made me what I am, and say I love you. Let me hold you in my arms forevermore. You have gone and made me such a fool. Never find you. You have come into my life and made me whole. Forever, let me wait to see you each and every morning. Let me hear you.
Kenny Rogers with Lady, courtesy of Declan, who was the technician on Take It From Us. He rang me last night and he said, well, look, I think it would be great to celebrate the life of Kenny Rogers and how can I help? And so he sent four tracks across to Planet FM. Well, we're talking today to Molly Ireland. Molly has written a book, Facing the Dark, A Journey into Suicide. Molly, because the title of that book has the word, the S word in it, what happened when you wanted to launch this book?
Well, it was pretty interesting, Sheldon. I was not able to. It's available on Amazon, and it's available in all other regions aside from New Zealand. But it got tagged in sort of the algorithm universe by Amazon, who has conveyed to me that because of New Zealand's strong guidelines on reporting on suicide, that they have taken the step to not allow it to be sold here in this country. So while I can sell it in every other country, unless I change the name of my book and redo it, I won't be able to sell it here in New Zealand. And this has been an interesting time for me, kind of learning through that whole process and really questioning the validity of that, knowing that there is a lot of substantial research on contagion factor and suicide reporting. And I think having strong media guidelines around that is important, right? But I also think that what we're doing is we're ignoring a whole nother body of research, which is really starting to come into effect, which is part of what's called the Papageno effect, which is based on the lead character in Mozart's opera, and one of Mozart's operas. And this was a character who was going to take his life, but didn't. And he found other ways. The opera's called The Magic Flute. And he found other ways to deal with his darkness, his own internal, stuff, and not take his own life. But yet I think our Romeo and Juliet characters of Shakespeare actually, you know, that those characters are much more known. And so there is a risk, especially if you talk about the method of suicide and if you publicize celebrity suicides, it is a problem.
But Amazon are exaggerating the constraints, I think, that exist in New Zealand. I did quite a bit of research into media and suicide and covering it. One of the things that absolutely staggered me in that research was that Tipau, which are part of Blueprint and part of the WISE Group, one of the largest mental health charities and organisations in New Zealand, they actually published a report which listed the most popular techniques for suicide.
Interesting, huh? Yeah, well, they must have gotten a coroner's report that said they got a note. They had a, because you can, as long as you go to the coroner and make sure you pass it everything through the coroner, then you can get a dispensation to actually do it.
Oh, I see. So
that's the law in this country.
Coroner's approval to publish this article. Mm. But it mentioned some of the most popular suicide techniques.
Yeah, and this is what we're not doing. We find a piece of research out of, say, you know, this was out of New York, Syracuse University, I believe it was, where it's a contagious thing, right? If you publicize all these things, it really increases the rates. But on the other hand, they've also shown research that when you talk about people overcoming hardship, people actually doing different things when you do that, which is largely what my book is about. Right. Suicide just happens to be because I lost my husband in that way. But what I learned and how I overcame and how my girls and I developed resilience and a real strength inside ourselves from that process, that's what the book is about. And the research shows that that is actually really preventative. That's really protective for people. That when they think about it and they see other people, especially people that they can respect who have come through it, it gives them more hope. It makes it less likely they will commit suicide.
Well, we're using the word here on Take It From Us. I've never been restricted from using the word. I talk about the statistics every time the provisional statistics come out. I am aware that talking about the methods could be pushing the envelope a little far. So what's your attitude about Amazon then? Do you think that they were a bit over the top?
I think it's just a black and white thing. You know, I think it's that they can't control, they don't know, they don't have the time to go through and look and say, New Zealand government can't go through and look and say, oh, this is a really good piece on suicide. Actually, it's really showing people going, overcoming obstacles and people, they've just made a blanket rule that if you got suicide somewhere in the title, it must be about suicide, must talk about those things that we don't want to talk about, we're cutting it off. There's no, we have to kind of evolve our understanding of this issue and really deepen our understanding of the research in particular. And the New Zealand government, you know, and I can understand why they haven't, but we're not at that level yet. The problem is when you say you can, when you put up any restrictions about something, then you're really sending the message to people who have ever had those ideas that somehow I'm more wrong than I even thought I was. Mm-hmm. Right? You're increasing the stigma. you're increasing the shame. You're less likely to reach out for help. Even with all those 800 numbers being publicized, you're less likely to actually reach out for, because somehow in this society, we believe that it is a darkness that we don't want to look at.
Yeah, but the road toll's a darkness as well.
But we're looking at that.
We're looking at that.
And COVID, can you imagine not mentioning, not talking about COVID-19 or the things we can do to help ourselves?
Yeah, well, I had one of my tennis colleagues who blamed the media for COVID-19. He said if they weren't reporting it, it would go away. I mean, this is the sort of dark attitudes that we have in this country.
Yeah, well, and it's the same thing. So can you imagine? There are things we know about helping people through mental health issues. And yet what we're doing is we're giving them 800 numbers, and that's great and everything. But there's also some really basic steps that really help us reach out to people and talk about it in a better way. But if there is this fear that if I somehow, even if the fear is not that punitive, even if that fear is there, it will increase the stigma and the shame that this psychiatric issue already has.
Is it a psychiatric issue? I mean, in my research, it did appear that probably 3/4 or more of the people that commit suicide are said to have a mental health problem, which, of course, doesn't paint mental health in a great way either. Is that your understanding, that this is really suicide is a mental health problem?
Yes, it is. Well, it's really interesting. I think it's a human problem. And we all have tendencies of poor mental health at one time or another.
Well, we all have mental health,
whether
it's poor or it's not poor.
Exactly. So, and one of the most fascinating things that's come out about research on depression in particular in the last year, this came out in April 2019 at the University of Colorado, is they did this massive study in the US to try to find the gene or the low chemical cause in the brain for depression, and they just couldn't find it. It's because there's so many other factors that play into depression, and largely it's a behavior. It's a learned behavior. Mm-hmm. And now people often don't want to hear that or want to talk about that, because that means, that somehow they feel they're to blame, which is not the truth at all. What it means is that we can unlearn it. It gives us back our power over a condition which is incredibly disempowering.
I mean, how did the pharmaceutical companies sell this theory that chemical imbalance causes depression and suicide?
It's a great business model, Sheldon. And listen, when I'm not against medication, if you are at a really low place, okay? So I want to say that too. It's really important you get help, whatever that looks like. The problem I have with medication or antidepressants or any of these things is it makes it less likely for us to actually change. And depression is a sign that something in our lives needs to shift fundamentally. And it's our job to go after that and to explore it, as opposed to just masking it or covering it up.
Well, I would say, Molly, that as I have reduced my antidepressant, my independence has risen dramatically. Now, what does that tell you?
Yes, because now you're really taking charge of your life. You're not blaming it on a chemical imbalance in your brain. You know, bad brain, oh, I'm sorry, nothing I can do about it.
Right.
Now, we as human beings, we don't want to take responsibility sometimes, but that's the very thing we're called to do.
Yeah, well, it's very strange, and how that has been sold to us all is amazing. Where can people access your book, Facing the Dark, A Journey into Suicide?
So the best thing to do if you are in New Zealand and you have an IP address, a New Zealand IP address, is to go to my website, beyondthecourse.co.nz.
Oh, Beyond the Course, C-O-U-R-S-E.
.co.nz. You can also probably search my name, Molly Ireland, and find it. I am now sending it out to people in New Zealand. It's a little bit more laborious, but it's something I have to do. If you have a UK IP or US or AU, any of those other ones, then you are able to buy it from Amazon directly. And you can go there and see my reviews and check it out. But if you want it here in New Zealand, beyondthecourse.co.nz.
Well, I did read a review. It says Molly's book is described online in this way. This heart-wrenching personal memoir takes readers on an uplifting and transformative journey with an Alaskan mother of four as she courageously rebuilds her family's life far from home after losing her husband to suicide. It is a candid and gripping story of one family's battle with chronic depression and their desperate search to find answers, including emigrating halfway around the world to New Zealand. Part memoir, partly an aid of self-development, Facing the Dark is a raw account. So we've got to go. We're just about there, Molly. I'd like to thank you very much and thank you for adapting to the agenda for Take It From Us today. I think it's been absolutely wonderful that we could respond to some of the COVID-19 challenges. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
How do you think anybody's supposed to read?